Thank you. If you'd like to refocus, any comments or questions or observations on the last bit that I've talked about? Anything anyone would like to pass on to us? David.
David, just reflecting on the conversation that Jane and I were having here, but the way that cultures develop and use story sometimes reflects where culture itself is and what it needs. And we were reflecting on the way that certainly during the 70s and 80s, quite a lot of stories moved away from that kind of classic pattern of you knew what the pattern was going to be and how the ending would be. We got very much into the role of the anti-hero with questions left in the air and the ending turned upside down. We were talking about the way that the classic Western, you knew what was going to happen and what the ending would be. And in all the Sergio Leone films, it's totally different. But that now again, in our era, we're getting more into things like the King's Speech kind of, which has got an iconic hero within it, and people come away from it feeling inspired with hope for the future. In the 70s and the 80s, we were a society that had money and confidence and security, and now we have insecurity and we have a poor economy and the threat of terrorism.
I think that's really interesting. One of the things the book says about the set stories is what's interesting is how you twist them and what you do with the endings and how the... And it's true about jokes, isn't it? I mean, the thing about a joke is the surprise ending, really. You sort of take yourself into a different level or a different layer. But that's certainly true about... And the really interesting... I mean, if you haven't seen The King's Speech, see it, you know. I mean, the time, it's wonderful. And the interesting thing about that is because we know the story... Nothing happens that we don't expect. But what happens is that it is concentrating on a tiny, tiny bit of the story and bringing that tiny bit of the story right to the front. And that one little bit, you know, the stammer, suddenly becomes the focus for a relationship, for the development of a personality, for his psychotherapy, and all that's got the war as a backdrop. So it's a really interesting sort of twist, and the way the stories are twisted, and the, you know, the invention of the anti-hero, effectively in the '70s and 80s, is really important, I think, for what was happening to us. Thank you.
Is one of the problems in preaching that a lot of the Christian stories aren't known, by the majority of people. And certainly, my wife's background is teaching. She taught at St. Swithin's Junior School. And when she started, you had to be a communicating member of the Anglican Church to teach. At the end, she was one of the few, before she retired, she was one of the few teachers who was prepared to stand up and to give a Christian story in the assembly.
I'll come back to that in a moment when we've had this one here as well. Those are both together.
I use stories a lot in my preaching. I do a lot of all-age worship, but I also go and preach in one little place which has got quite an elderly congregation, not very many of them, and I can use the same stuff more or less in all of them by using storytelling and getting people into the story. And you can ask a lot of questions within the story to get them to think through what it means today, and I find that is very effective, particularly when you've got a huge age range in your congregation and when they don't know the stories, because that's increasingly common that I'm finding.
Thank you. I mean, part of me is almost tempted to say not knowing the Christian story might be an advantage, because if we're working with what might be a fairly blank piece of paper in terms of their knowledge and understanding, at least it's not been corrupted by what's gone before. And I think that's one issue. I think the other issue is, people hark back to the wonderful time when we were kids, when we had Christian assemblies every day and knew the Bible stories. Well, if it worked, churches would be full with people our age, and they ain't. You know, it's clearly whatever we were doing in the 50s in schools didn't work. So we don't want to go back to that. We want somehow to find a different way, don't we? I mean, one of the things that says to me is, I mean, what's really interesting is that people do find their identity and their meaning of life through stories. And they find them now mostly, I suspect, through television stories and through soap operas. So one of the reasons the soaps are so popular and so important to our culture is that people find their meaning and understanding through what happens to those characters, which to me is deeply sad, but that's reality. I had a really interesting conversation with my media son a couple of years ago about videoing weddings. And it came up partly because someone wanted to video a funeral that I was involved in, so they could send the pictures to the son in Australia because he couldn't come across the funeral. So I had this conversation with Matthew. I don't like videoing weddings. Why don't you like videoing weddings, Dad? Because I think in a wedding, you are concentrating on the present moment when you make the vows. And what's really important is that moment, and I want total focus on that. And if you replay it time and time again, what it does is to water down or devalue the importance of the single moment when you make the vows. But, he said, for most people, real life is on television. Their own life is a pale reflection of what happens on telly. So if you can put their wedding on telly, that makes it much more real for them. Now, I think he's probably right, you see. I think he's right that for most people, EastEnders and Coronation Street are more real than what happens to themselves day by day, and they interpret themselves through that. Not knowing the Christian story means that if you know the Christian story, you can interpret yourself and who you are and your place in the world through that story. If you don't know it, you can't. You look for other stories. You interpret it through EastEnders or The Archers, if you're middle class, you know, or whatever. but the purpose of soaps is to give you a narrative within which you can understand who you are and how you relate to the world. The purpose of the Christian story is to give you a narrative in which you can understand who you are and how you relate to the world and to God and to each other. If you've only got one set, you've got no options to which to use. One more, yeah?
There are two sides to this. The first is that adults like stories, and we have for years and years denied them the right to have stories anymore once they grow up. And that when you tell adults stories, you can tell them subversive truths that they won't hear as a straight, suppose as an admonishing, maybe. You can actually slip things in that they kind of take. On the other side are children who, in some ways, we overdo the story. We tell them Noah and we tell them the prodigal son, but we, at the expense of encouraging their spiritual understanding. And children are very spiritual beings, and if we only tell them stories without helping the spiritual bit in, we actually fail them. So I think that's the sort of the both and.
Thank you. I mean, I think I agree with most of that. I think the adults do like stories, which is why the soaps are so popular. We've pretended that we can leave stories behind and have creeds instead. To most adults in churches, and we can't. I mean, the wonderful example of a subversive story is David and Nathan, isn't it? Whereas the prophet goes to David and he says, "Look, this bloke has stolen a sheep, and he's got dozens of sheep himself, and his neighbour's got one little sheep, and he's stolen it." And David says, "This man shall die." And Nathan says, "You are the man." Because if he'd just gone up and said, "Look, King, you've done wrong," he'd have said, "You know, get lost." But the story converts him, helps him, enables him to see himself. Now that means that the stories have got pretty good stories, pretty powerful parables. And maybe we as a church should be putting work into it. I mean, it raises the whole question of symbolism as well, doesn't it? I mean, Paul Tillich in the 1950s was writing about the way in which the current Christian symbols have died because they are worked out in a particular agrarian context, in a particular culture. And so even if you tell them now, you know, tell kids the stories of the lost sheep. Not a clue, really. Tell them the story of Noah's Ark. Not a clue, because, you know. And what Tillich suggests is that we need new symbols in order to do the power. Because symbols are like jokes, you see. If you have to explain a joke, it doesn't work. It's not funny. If you have to explain a symbol, it doesn't work. If I have to explain to you what this little bit of gold around my finger is, well, yeah, you can sort of get the idea that it's to do with my wedding and my marriage. But you instinctively know what that symbolism is without me having to say anything. And what Tillich says is we can't invent them. We can't make new symbols for ourselves. We've got to let God speak through a prophet to give us a new set of symbols for a new age. And sometimes I think that's where we are as a church, isn't it? That, you know, renewal in the church has come about through some great prophets. Francis of Assisi, Martin Luther, John Wesley, etc., etc. And so however hard we try and however hard we work and however hard we struggle, what we actually need is God to send a prophet to renew us. And we've got to be awake and open and listening. And David said we had to finish about 12:30 because some people might like a break or even a drink before lunch. So having told two stories about rabbis, I'm going to finish with a third, which is about a rabbi who in Dublin is involved in a fatal traffic accident and is knocked down crossing the road. And the rabbi is lying gasping with his last breath on the road in Dublin, and a Catholic priest rushes up to him and says, "Look, you're dying," he says. "You've got to confess belief in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three persons in one God. Do you believe in the Holy Trinity?" And the rabbi says, "Here I am dying, and the man asks me a riddle."